Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. It's Friday, June the 12th, and our top story today. After a deadly outbreak of meningitis in Kent earlier this year, a one-off vaccination programme's being offered to help protect Year 13 pupils across England. Two young people died after falling ill from the disease in March, which was linked to a nightclub in Canterbury. Under 25s starting uni for the first time are also being offered two doses of the MenB jab. Well, Dr. Julian Spinks is a GP in Medway. He's been speaking to Lucy.
I think that I'm slightly reassured that they've decided to go this way. And I think an awful lot of parents of teenagers who are heading off to university or other places will also be reassured that they get some protection. The outbreak that happened earlier in the year in Kent came as a shock to a lot of the medical profession. It was a large outbreak, much larger than the normal one, and impacted so many people from one place. And so I think that public health have been looking carefully. I'm told that there are more outbreaks this year than normal, and some of those are bigger than normal. So things may have shifted. And so it's a wise precaution to be vaccinating people who are going into that at-risk group in advance of them going to university.
Yeah, it feels like they've acted quite quickly to sort of respond to this. But obviously with students starting university in September, there's a sort of limited amount of time to get them vaccinated before that.
Yes, it's a short time and there's two doses need to go in. The year 13 pupils, which are the majority of these, will be contacted. It'll either be by letter, email, or if they've got the NHS app through that. But there is another group, which are people under 25 who are going to university or another residential educational institute. Who can be vaccinated. It's not so clear how they're going to be recalled. And the other thing we don't know as yet is exactly where they're going to get the vaccinations. It sounds like school will be a good idea, but the problem we've got is 3 weeks into July, the schools break up and the second dose would be right in the middle of August and the school holidays. So they're probably going to have other arrangements, but it's not clear what they're doing at this point.
Now, this has been described as a one-off vaccine programme. Do you think it's something they could continue with in future years as well?
There's a possibility of that. At the moment, the Joint Committee on Vaccines and Immunisations is actually looking at the situation. They were the ones who recommended the previous scheme coming in, and that was anybody after September 2015, babies were offered the vaccination. But we have got this cohort of teenagers and young adults who missed out on that. They're going to look, but for this year, they couldn't wait for the outcome of that. So that's why they've jumped in and used this one-off scheme. But I would not be surprised if it turns out next year it's going to become a regular feature.
What about for younger pupils, you know, students who may be like 16, 17 and are still going out mixing with big groups? I know some of the people who caught meningitis in the recent outbreak were younger, you know, sixth formers. Should they be given any protection, do you think?
Again, it's something I think that needs to be considered going forward. Generally, that group hasn't got as higher impact for meningitis B. The biggest problems are in children, particularly infants, who are at much greater risk. And then there's this jump up around the time when people go to university. But yes, we've got either we're going to have to do it every year to catch up as they get to year 13, or that we're going to have to go back and do all the children who've missed out. And that's anybody who's over the age of 11 who hasn't had a vaccination in Kent, for example, after the outbreak we had.
Louise Jones-Roberts is the owner of Club Chemistry, which was at the centre of the outbreak earlier this year. She campaigned for a vaccine programme.
I'm really relieved that they're rolling this out. I have continued communications with the government on this, mainly just because I just didn't want it to be where, from our end, things went quiet. I wanted to keep the pressure up. So I'm really relieved that they've done this. I'm slightly baffled as to why only one off. I would have thought it made sense for a rolling programme of this for people in year 13 going into university or onto whatever. So I don't know if they're going to look at that. And obviously, there's been another fatality in the interim period from our outbreak. So there's always questions around whether a more rapid program would have helped or alleviated, but still immensely grateful that we're there now for this year.
Yeah, you mentioned there as to whether this could be more than just a one-off vaccination program. Is that something you would continue to push for then?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't understand why not. So there were 330 cases of meningitis B in the last 12 months. 10% of those are fatal. So there's 33 people essentially, there or thereabouts, have died from something that's preventable. And those that have passed away have been predominantly in the age group 15 to 25. So these are young, preventable, completely unnecessary deaths.
You obviously put a load of literature up in the club after what happened, telling people to be careful and, you know, avoid sharing vapes and things like that. Have you seen behaviours change since you've reopened, Louise?
Yes, I think people are much more conscious about sharing of vapes, most definitely. And policing no vaping inside has become easier as well. So it was already a policy, it wasn't allowed, but trying to keep on top of it was really challenging because it was ubiquitous. Now you say to somebody, if you get caught vaping, you're out, and you are out. Everybody takes that on board. So that's been a positive outcome, I think.
Bookings for the vaccine are expected to open in mid-July. Eligible young people will need two doses given at least 4 weeks apart. You can also read this story in more detail at kentonline.co.uk.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and a learner driver who left a passenger with serious injuries in a head-on crash in Sheerness has avoided being sent to prison. Stephen Killey also wasn't insured when he smashed into a people carrier on Bryle Way in May last year. The 37-year-old from Well Road in the Rushendon part of Queenborough was given a suspended sentence and 12-month driving ban. A Maidstone man who was previously spared jail for abusing a young boy is now behind bars after police found indecent images of children on his phone. Harvey Doughty was given a suspended sentence in 2024, and officers later carried out a surprise visit to check his devices. They discovered secret accounts and conversations with an AI chatbot that was pretending to be a 10-year-old girl. The 23-year-old from Knock Court has been locked up for 10 months. A person's been treated by paramedics after breathing in smoke during a house fire in Cranbrook. The blaze broke out at Marden Road yesterday afternoon. Three fire engines were sent to tackle the flames. It's unclear what caused it. Now, a 91-year-old woman has been forced to leave her home of 20 years just weeks after being targeted by thieves. Lucy's here with more on the story.
Well, Queenie Watts was a resident of the Cutbush and Coral Almshouse in Maidstone, but was becoming unable to live independently, which is a condition of the accommodation. In November, she fell victim to a con artist who tricked her way into her home by pretending to be a carer, took her bank card and stole more than £2,000 from her account. Queenie had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and vascular dementia in February last year, and her family say it's devastating that she's been forced to leave the place she knew and loved. They applied to Kent County Council for a place at a care home, but after an assessment in March this year, the authority decided residential care wasn't the right solution for her. That meant they wouldn't get any funding, and care home fees usually cost around £1,500 a week. A family member's now used his own money to get Queenie a place, and she's living happily in Bearstead. KCC have also agreed to carry out another assessment.
Thanks ever so much, Lucy. An attendant man who's struggling to care for his seriously ill wife says he's heartbroken after a visa application for his stepdaughter to come over from Zimbabwe was refused. 77-year-old Joan Weir has spent the last 7 months on a hospital bed in her living room after suffering a stroke. She also had to have her right leg amputated due to gangrene. She has six carers a day, but her husband Chris, who's 81, says he needs more support. Jones' daughter isn't allowed to come to the UK as officials don't believe she would return home or be able to fund her stay. The Home Office have told us they won't comment on individual cases.
Kent Online reports.
It's been revealed councils in Kent have set aside almost £13 million to fund the process of abolishing themselves. Local government reorganisation will see current local authorities scrapped and replaced with fewer, bigger, unitary bodies. We're expecting the government to announce next month how many councils there'll be in Kent and where their borders will be. A junior school in Canterbury has announced plans to join a multi-academy trust. Bosses at St Stephen's are asking staff and parents what they think of the idea. They want to join Turner Schools, which already oversees 8 sites across Canterbury, Dover and Folkestone. Now, the masts of a bomb ship that sunk off Kent during the Second World War are going to stay in the county when they're finally removed. The SS Richard Montgomery went down off Sheerness in 1944. A contract has been awarded to remove the masts as the wreck has become unstable. The US has agreed to hand them over. Meantime, 90 new sites have been added to a list of heritage assets in Swale. Prospect Villa in Minster, a memorial statue for the Short Brothers in Laysdown, and an Art Deco cinema building in Sittingbourne are all included. The King's Ferry Bridge and Sheerness Water Tower have also been chosen as significant landmarks. The conservation of every place on the list will now have to be considered in any planning applications. Now, next on the podcast, we've been told that 5 big office buildings in Kings Hill could be demolished to make way for new houses. Bosses say the sites are mostly empty because of a huge change in how we all work after COVID. Office sites elsewhere, you might well have seen, have been turned into flats. But Harry Traher from Praxis, which owns the sites, has been telling me that's not an option here.
We're effectively going to be proposing a demolition of those existing office buildings and the construction of some high quality homes on those sites. It wouldn't be appropriate both for the quality of accommodation that the local Kings Hill community would expect in terms of the quality of housing, and also the local market just doesn't demand flats, which is what you would end up putting into an existing building. So we're proposing a full demolition of all of the buildings on those sites, and we have as part of our outline planning application, we'll be including some illustrative layouts showing what we think could be built on those sites as and when planning consent's granted.
That's quite interesting then to what's happened in other areas where office blocks have been converted and perhaps haven't necessarily worked as people would like. Does it make the project a lot longer in terms of getting those houses built if you are obviously going to demolish those office blocks? But in the long term, it will make a much nicer community, I presume.
Yeah, I mean, I would expect that if we permitted development consent is quicker and easier to achieve. Whether that would be the case locally within Tunbridge and Walling, I don't know. These processes do take time. It's obviously important that we design these schemes well. Admittedly, we're going for an outline consent, and the way that works is that a developer will then end up doing a deal with a developer to buy these sites, and they'll come along later and submit a reserve matters application. So they will really go through the detailed design process. It is relatively long-winded. But I think as you sort of alluded to, it's important that we're building, good quality product for the local community. Everyone with a vested interest in Kings Hill the opportunity to understand what we're proposing and have the opportunity to comment on those proposals.
Yeah, I was going to say, how important is it that you take the community of Kings Hill along with you? I mean, I'm presuming they would much prefer some really lovely looking properties where people are actually moving into the community rather than empty office blocks that don't really serve a purpose anymore. But how important is it that they have a say and will you take on board any feedback that they give you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's hugely important for us to make sure that we're doing the best for Kings Hill. And, part of that is improving employment prospects and attracting, you know, good quality businesses to the to Kings Hill. You know, and that's why we're investing money in the existing office portfolio that we're going to retain. But equally, yeah, we want to be creating, yeah, as I said, good quality homes, and engagement with the local communities, and really important for us to make sure that we're doing the right thing.
Plans of what the area could eventually look like have gone on show today for the first time.
Kent Online reports.
A homeless charity has revealed it's struggling to keep up with demand following a drop in donations. Medway Street Angels run soup kitchens three times a week from a car park on Clover Street in Chatham. Bosses say they spent more than £32,000 on food last year, but donations dropped from £41,000 to £37,000. Plans to expand a seaside oyster shack onto a beach in Whitstable have been put forward. Bosses at the Forge want to build a new decked area on the shingle in front of the venue. Similar plans by the Whitstable Oyster Company were rejected back in 2021 after the whole thing ended up in court. The people behind a redevelopment of the bandstand in Herne Bay say they plan to spend £800,000. Hassan and Nejmi Hassan, who own Macari's in the town, have been given commercial control of the structure. Repairs to the stage are expected to start this summer as they hope to bring live music back to the venue. And finally, ahead of a memorial being unveiled in Dartford, Craig Revel Hallwoods paid tribute to fellow Strictly judge Len Goodman.
I'm absolutely delighted to be joining you in Dartford for this very special tribute to Len Goodman. Len was not only a wonderful judge and broadcaster, but also a true ambassador for ballroom dancing. He had that rare gift of making everyone feel welcome, whether they were world champions or complete beginners taking their very first steps onto the dance floor. I had the privilege, of course, of working with Len for many years, and what people saw on television was exactly what it was like in real life, to a degree. Warm, witty, knowledgeable, and always ready for a perfectly timed one-liner. He loved dance, but more importantly, he loved people. One of my fondest memories, of course, is his incredible ability to put contestants at ease, even when they were terrified. Behind the scenes, he was always encouraging, always supportive, and always full of laughter. That's why I think it's so fitting that Dartford Borough Council is recognising Len's contribution and celebrating the remarkable legacy he leaves behind. He inspired generations of dancers and brought the joy of ballroom dancing into millions of homes around the world. I'm really honoured to be part of this tribute and very much look forward to joining you as we celebrate the life, career and lasting impact of the wonderful Len Goodman. See you there.
The TV star passed away in April 2023, just 6 months after announcing his retirement. An interactive artwork is going to be installed outside his dance school on Market Street next month.
Kent Online Sports.
Cricket, and after a run of games in the T20 Blast, Kent are returning to the longer format of the game. They've travelled to take on Lancashire in the county championship. If the rain stays away, play is due to get underway at 11 over the next 4 days. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning, which is via The Briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the site, you can also subscribe to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. Don't forget, today you can check out the latest review from our secret drinker and head to the What's On pages of Kent Online for details of everything going on in the county over the weekend. Hope you have a fantastic couple of days. We'll be back with the podcast on Monday.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.